This episode is supported by Active Skin Repair. Active Skin Repair is a skin health company helping people heal with natural, non-toxic, medical-grade ingredients. I just randomly, Vinny was having a toe skin irritation issue, and he ended up having this like skin that was really irritating him, and it was getting kind of like icky, and you know, like when kids start to get like little scabs and scratches and then they want to pick at it, and it was getting worse. And so Active Skin Repair showed up on my doorstep as a result of the sponsorship, and I got to put it to use immediately. And I got the ointment formula, or the like ointment formulation, and then also the spray, and the spray was perfect. So Vinny does not like ointmenty, creamy, lotiony things on his body, but I was able to get out the spray, literally took it out of the packaging the day it arrived, put it on his toe before he went to bed. And the next morning he was like, "Mom, my toe's all better." It was literally like this super amazing cure that helped his toes so quickly. So you can use Active Skin Repair on a wide range of skin issues, including cuts, scrapes, burns, sunburns, rashes, other types of skin damage. It's totally safe, non-toxic, suitable on all types of skin, even parts of the body where you might have rosacea or eczema or have acne-prone skin. This is also safe for the youngest members of your family up to the oldest. So now you have one simple solution for your family's skin health needs. With over 500,000 happy customers and thousands of five-star reviews and super safe and clean ingredients, Active Skin Repair is something that you want to have on hand for your family. So to get your own Active Skin Repair, go to activeskinrepair.com to learn more about Active Skin Repair and get 20% off your order when you use the code SHAMELESS. That's activeskinrepair.com. Use the code SHAMELESS for 20% off your order. activeskinrepair.com, code SHAMELESS. This is the Shameless Mom Academy, episode 857, with Sivan Hong. Show notes for this episode, including any links mentioned in the episode, can be found by going to shamelessmom.com and clicking on episode 857. Welcome to the Shameless Mom Academy. I'm your host, Sarah Dean. I'm here to give you and other passionate, driven, unapologetic moms tools, resources, and a little bit of humor to help you lead more positive, powerful, and purposeful lives every damn day. One of the best things about the Shameless Mom Academy is our community, so be sure to join us in our free private Facebook group to connect with other shameless moms just like you. You can find us over at shamelessmom.com/Facebook. All right, let's dive into today's episode. Sivan Hong is both the author and illustrator of the top-selling children's series, The Super Fun Day Books. Her acclaimed titles, including Benny J. and the Horrible Halloween, George J. and the Miserable Monday, Emily D. and the Fearful First Day, Avery G. and the Scary End of School, and Joey T. and the Winter Holiday Worries, depict the victories of neurodiverse children as they tackle difficulties with perseverance and bravery. Furthermore, the Super Fun Day books are available in Spanish and as audiobooks, ensuring they resonate with all kinds of learners. Her influential work has garnered attention from multiple news outlets. In addition to her literary pursuits, Sivan actively serves as a trustee of the board of the Rita Allen Foundation, using her vast experience and passion to effect positive change. Away from her professional endeavors, Sivan cherishes her role as a wife and mother to two delightful and neurodivergent children. The family, which also includes their beloved dog and cat, all live in Connecticut. This was a fantastic conversation, hearing from a mom who has two neurodiverse children, who is neurodiverse herself and also works with supporting neurodiverse kids, was just a great learning experience for me. And I think it will also be a great learning experience for you, regardless of whether or not you are a neurodiverse person or your child is. We talk about how neurodivergence is something we all need to know about, because really, what is quote unquote neurotypical? Also, your kid is going to be friends with neurodivergent kids, and they're going to be in your house and in your kids' playgroups and classrooms and sports teams and friend groups and all of these things. So it would be like the responsible thing to learn about how we're all different in different ways. And some of us have brains that are differently wired, as we've talked about in different podcast episodes from way back when, even starting when we talked to Debbie Reber, who authored Differently Wired. So this is a conversation we've been having in different ways over the course of years in the Shameless Mom Academy. And I love what everything Sivan has shared here today, how it interlocks with the other pieces of the conversation we've been having over the years. So with all that, listen in to hear Sivan share what her life as a neurodivergent woman and mother to two neurodivergent children looks like, a comparison of the academic structures of traditional classroom settings and classrooms specifically for neurodivergent kids, how the term neurodiverse came into common use, what it means and what it doesn't mean, why it's so important for, quote, neurotypical people to understand neurodiversity, the tremendous losses that occur societally when we aren't open to creating accommodations for neurodiversity, the importance of being a proud self-advocate for neurodivergent people, the role of neurotypical people in advocating for neurodivergent people, the role of neurodivergent people advocating for themselves and how to be proud of that, and then the problem with framing diagnoses from a position of deficits rather than strengths or weaknesses. And I really loved this ending talking point that we worked through, walked through. It left me seeing things in a different light in a really, really important way, which maybe is commonly known in neurodiverse communities and neurodivergent work, but it was new to me and it felt like a really significant yet simple mental shift around how I think about or position neurodiversity in different ways, including my own as a neurodiverse person myself. So I think you're going to learn a lot from this episode. I'm so grateful for this conversation and the time that Sivan Hong spent with me within the Shameless Mom Academy. So with all that said, please join me in welcoming Sivan Hong to the Shameless Mom Academy. Sivan, welcome to the Shameless Mom Academy. I'm so excited to have you here.
Thanks for having me on, Sarah.
I can already tell it's going to be a fun conversation because we already hit it off in our pre-interview.
Yes, and people can't see it, but we're both wearing glasses and we have straight hair and it's kind of a thing.
I was actually, when we popped on together on Zoom and I saw you come on with glasses and I was like, this is just who we are now.
Like, that's right.
Everyone I get on Zoom with now, we're like, here we are with our readers.
Yes, right. I turned 50 this year. This is just the way it's going to be.
I just turned 48. So yeah. This is who we are now. All right. So I'm really excited to talk today about neurodivergency. So we're going to be digging into your story around being a neurodivergent woman and mom, raising two neurodivergent children. We've been talking about neurodivergence on the show for a while. We've been talking about mental health. We've been talking about inclusivity around these things and talking openly about these things. So this conversation, I think, will layer beautifully into conversations that we've already had inside our community. What I want to start with before we get into all of that goodness that I know is going to help support our community and open our eyes in new ways, I would love to talk a little bit about the dynamics of your personal and professional life beyond your bio and anything you're excited about right now.
So, you know, my bio kind of highlights the fact that I'm an author and I used to be a professor and I had a big business career. And while all those things are true, for me, kind of my primary role in the world right now feels like mom. And my kids started a new school this year. And for me, that is the thing that is like the thing that lets me sleep at night because, and we'll talk about this later, but, you know, having neurodivergent kids, school system doesn't always match the way they learn and the way their brain thinks. And I found a school that I think does that. And so right now in my world, I've been struggling with this for, you know, 10 years trying to find that fit. And I think I did. So that's my big, exciting thing.
That's really exciting. I'm so happy for you because I know other people who have gone on that journey of trying to find the right fit school for a neurodivergent child. And it is it can be a really long path. May I ask how old your kids are, the grades?
Sure, absolutely. So I have a sixth grader who is autistic and has ADHD. I have a fourth grader with ADHD and kids with that profile can find a challenge in a typical kind of classroom setting. You know, they have a hard time paying attention and staying focused. They have a hard time not constantly being engaged. When my son was in fourth grade, he used to sit in class and do a Rubik's Cube all day long because he could understand everything that was going on in the classroom, but he needed so many inputs for his brain to engage and to stay focused that he needed to be like speed cubing while listening to the teacher. Otherwise, the school setting didn't fit, right? Yeah. And so being able to have an environment where a child is constantly engaged means that he's not sitting there playing with a Rubik's Cube all day long, but he's actually really learning and learning the tools of how to be a student.
Mm. Which is a huge gift. And especially if it's been hard to find that. I'm thinking of a close friend of mine has a son who has autism and has ADHD and a couple other things. And I remember her talking about a school that they found where in comparison to a traditional school day, that in this school that was specifically for children, most primarily with ADHD, that the kids changed what they were doing curriculum wise and like activity wise every 10 minutes. And they took the parents through. So for curriculum night, they had the parents like walk through the kids' schedule for like an hour. And the parents were like, what is happening? But the kids like thrived because they got the best 10 minutes of like every, you know, everything
right.
Get into. It was like they get the best 10 minutes and then they change gears. And so there was not anything where the kids had to try to stay engaged for like 40 minutes. But the parents were just exhausted. Like if you don't right, have an ADHD if you were, brain.
Right. If your brain doesn't work that way, that model doesn't fit. So you can right. imagine putting a kid with ADHD in a typical school and what that feels like for them on a daily basis. Right. And it's that same like square peg round hole issue that those parents were feeling at back to school night where these kids experience every day. One of the cool things that the school that my kids go to does, I'll give you an example, is in a poetry class, they, for like third graders, the teacher would blow up the poem and cut it out, cut out all the words. And then she would paste the poem in its entirety on the wall on the other side of the room. And the kids would have a big sheet with a glue stick, and they would have to run back and forth and put the poem together like a puzzle. And in doing so, obviously, they have tons of movement breaks. They would identify patterns in the poem. So they're learning about the pentameter of the poem as third graders. They're moving. And at the end, because they have to go back and forth so many times and find the words, they had memorized the poem. So these kids
amazing.
Learn, right? They can learn and they can learn in amazing ways. You just have to structure it in the kind of way that allows kids like this to take in the information and thrive.
Oh my gosh, that's such a cool example. I love that. A conversation I have with a friend who has a child in our school right now who has autism, she talks about a lot of learning methods for children, whether they have ADHD or autism or all sorts of neurodivergencies, can actually be really beneficial for all learners. But we're so used to everything being like this very specific formulaic way that it's been for a million years and et cetera. And she's given some examples too, where she's like, why don't we just do it this way for everyone? Like this works for kids with ADHD and or autism, but couldn't this be great for everyone? And it's been so fascinating, the examples that she's given, where I'm like, why don't we do it that way? Like that makes so, and a lot of it is around your point, like engaging the brain in all these different ways where everybody wins. Everyone benefits from having like this multidisciplinary approach.
Well, I mean, even some of the basic stuff like, you know, fidget toys or bouncy seats for younger kids, every little kid needs to move constantly while they're learning. It's not just kids with neurodivergent brains that need this. There's so many little things that schools could do to make the classroom a more inclusive setting that isn't that hard of a lift if they were mindful enough to go out and do that sort of thing.
Right. Yeah. It requires a big stretch for educators and systems to
Yes. And unfortunately, you know, so many educators out there want to be able to do this, but they don't have the tools and they don't have the training and
or even permission or
like,
you know, administrative permission.
Right. And they're so often focused, and this is a complete like, you know, tangent, but they're so often focused on standardized tests and what do those outcomes look like that they're not given that flexibility in their classrooms in order to teach the kids the way the kids should learn.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah. We could do a whole nother episode. Yes. I'm like, do we talk about standardized testing or are we going to just glaze
over? Like, that's why I was like, I just warned you that it was.
No, I mean, I want to have that conversation, but I'm going to save it because I know we have a lot to talk about, but it's a conversation I've had with many parents, and it's like fitness testing and PE. Like all of it is so, so ridiculous. It's just, the kids, it benefits. Like, they don't need the benefits, and then the kids, it doesn't, it's harmful. So that's
that's exactly right.
Okay. So I want to talk, we already kind of dug right into terminology here, but I would love for you to give us some background on neurodiversity and why it matters for people who are neurotypical. And then maybe if you could kind of define those terms a little bit as well for us.
Sure. So the way people refer to neurodiversity, and it's a term that came out in the 1990s by a woman named Judy Singer, who said, brains are different and the way they work are different, just like any other variation in human biology. So some people are tall and some people are short and some people have blonde hair and some people have brown hair. brains function differently in that same way. And if we recognize the fact that brains function differently, then the expectations of how those brains work should look different. Now, there's somewhat of a misnomer in the way people talk about neurodiversity, in that they're like, oh, some people are neurodivergent and some people are neurotypical. And neurotypical meaning you are kind of within the standard deviation of normal, and neurodivergent meaning you are an outlier. Mm-hmm. But when you look at how many people are actually neurodivergent, when you think about all the different ways that brains can be different, right? It's not just autism or ADHD, which is fairly common, or dyslexia, but bipolarity, giftedness, all these things are mm-hmm. different ways that brains work. There really isn't this idea that some are typical and some are divergent. There's just a giant spectrum of the way brains function. And even amongst kind of those diagnoses of neurodivergence, it's just a giant spectrum. We come up with these labels that we put on this child is autistic, this child has ADHD. But when you look at the characteristics of how those things manifest, it is a giant spectrum. There are things that I do as somebody with ADHD that somebody with autism also does. And there may be people with autism that don't do that, right? It is not this like very clean line, definitionally defined determination. But it's helpful to call out the fact that it exists, because unlike a lot of different biological differences, neurodiversity is not one you can see. Mm-hmm. It's invisible. And so by talking about it and labeling it, it allows people to get accommodations, and it brings awareness to the fact that this difference exists.
That makes a ton of sense. And I actually noticed when you sent us some notes that you had neurotypical in quotes. And I was like, I feel like that's an important thing to address. And I didn't mention that when I asked the question, but now we can see and understand why this is in quotes, because we're not going to put two brains together. Like, not like right. Everyone who's quote unquote neurotypical has like the same brain.
Right.
Like they're all operating in the same capacity.
Right. And there are so many variations to how people learn and how people think and how people process the world around them, that saying that one of those is typical is like saying that being 5'6" and blonde and blue eyes means you're typical. Right.
Like, mm-hmm. Right.
That's absurd. We would never say such a thing. And so that's why I put it in quotes.
Yeah. Which absolutely makes sense. This episode is supported by Nutrafol. Did you know that hair thinning will happen to approximately 1 in 2 women? If you're among them, you are not alone. Thinning hair is normal, but it's not openly talked about, so it can feel lonely and frustrating and sometimes even embarrassing when you're going through it yourself. Join the over 1 million people who are doing something about their thinning hair with Nutrafol. Nutrafol is the number one dermatologist-recommended hair growth supplement, with over 1 million people seeing thicker, stronger, faster-growing hair with less shedding. Oh my gosh, I am a heavy shedder, so if you are a heavy shedder, or if you are someone who's wanting to thicken your hair, I definitely want you to try out Nutrafol. I have loved using it myself, and I know multiple other people who've used it and have found great results. While many supplements rely solely on ingredient studies, Nutrafol clinically tests final formulations to ensure their efficacy. In a clinical study, 86% of women reported improved hair growth after taking Nutrafol Women's Hair Growth Supplement for 6 months. To get started, you can take their hair quiz on Nutrafol.com, which will give you a personalized health plan based on your special root causes. Nutrafol is committed to helping you identify root causes of any shedding or hair loss so that you can really start to rebuild healthy hair in a way that is customized to you. So take the first steps to visibly thicker, healthier hair. For a limited time, Nutrafol is offering our listeners $10 off your first month subscription and free shipping when you go to Nutrafol.com and enter the promo code SHAMELESS. Find out why 4,500 healthcare professionals and hairstylists recommend Nutrafol for healthier hair. Go to Nutrafol.com. That's Nutrafol.com, promo code SHAMELESS. Nutrafol.com, code SHAMELESS. This episode is supported by AquaTrue. Having clean, safe water is the last thing you want to worry about. But unfortunately, according to extensive research by the Environmental Working Group, 3 out of 4 homes in America have harmful contaminants in their tap water. So that's why you got to check out AquaTrue. AquaTrue purifiers have a 4-stage reverse osmosis purification process, and their countertop purifiers, which is what we have, take no installation or plumbing, and they remove 15 times more contaminants than ordinary pitcher filters. And they're specifically designed to combat chemicals like PFAS, which can lead to potentially adverse health effects like cancer, endocrine system disruption, and liver toxicity, which is part of what makes AquaTrue so special, unique, and important in terms of how they are able to filter water. They also have water purifiers to fit every type of home. So like the installation-free countertop purifier that we have at our house to higher capacity under sink options. They even have Wi-Fi connected purifiers and mineral boost options. So I'm so excited about our new AquaTrue. And here's the thing. I swear it's like a gentle reminder to actually drink more water every time you walk into your kitchen. So we are drinking more water now and also more clean water. So more water that is more clean. It feels like a double win. I'm feeling pretty impressed with us. I feel like sink water, tap water becomes invisible at a certain point. And when I see the purifier on my counter, it's like many time a day reminder to like, keep drinking, keep drinking. So I want you to check out AquaTrue for yourself and for your family. AquaTrue comes with a 30-day money back guarantee, and that makes it a great gift as well. Today, my listeners can receive 20% off any AquaTrue purifier when you go to aquatrue.com. That's AquaTrue.com and enter the code shameless at checkout. That's 20% off any AquaTrue purifier when you go to aquatrue.com and use the code shameless, S-H-A-M-E-L-E-S-S, aquatrue.com, code shameless. I also appreciate talking about invisible differences. And this has been something that's been so interesting with so my son's 11, as he's gotten older and like pointing, and he'll point out, and he's done this since he was really little. And actually, I remember in preschool, he started doing this when he was like three. There was a little boy and a little girl in his class who both just really different developmental milestones than the rest of the class. And so he would point out like, oh, why do they do this? And why do they do that? And we started these conversations around like, different people, you know, do things in different ways or at different times and develop differently. And sometimes it looks like this and sometimes it looks like that. So as he's gone through grade school, as of course, there's things that are visible where you can see differences, but as there's been more opportunity to see things that are like really subtly different, which are and often invisible, there's been a lot of great conversation around, oh, maybe that's because maybe they do that thing because their brain works this way. And there's a number of children in his classroom who have been diagnosed with ADHD. And so it's been interesting also to see the spectrum. Like for this person, it looks like this. For that person, it looks like that. And even within a specific neurodiversity, that it doesn't look the same. And we, you know, same with autism, like can look vastly different from one kid to the next. And so that piece has been really interesting as well to help him understand what like everyone's differences and what in the spectrum that can look like.
And that's a really important point. And it's great that your 11-year-old can see that, because many times people who are diagnosing these differences don't see that, right? Mm-hmm. They're, the tests that have been developed to identify somebody who's autistic were developed on white boys. And so what that means, right? What that means is that when a girl is mm-hmm. looked at, she is far less likely to get a diagnosis of autism because it may manifest itself in a very different way. Same thing with ADHD. Yeah. And even more interestingly is there's even a bigger gap between kids of color on these things, because too often somebody will look at a child of color and say they're misbehaving, whereas the same behavior in a white kid may be ADHD. And so yes. The diagnosis rates for these things are hugely, hugely inaccurate. Mm-hmm. And so often the kids who are getting the accommodations and on the support are biased based on the way people are been diagnosing these things. You know, girls never got diagnosed with ADHD when I was growing up, right? Yeah. That would never have been a thing, because girls tend, you know, some don't, but girls tend to not be bouncing off the walls in school. They're bored in their heads, mm-hmm. right? They don't show it with their bodies as much. And so they don't get the diagnosis. But because we have these mindsets of what we think this should look like, there's a lot of kids not getting the support they need.
I was diagnosed at 47 with ADHD, and I had to fight with a psychiatrist who, not the person who actually ended up diagnosing me, a few years ago, I had to fight with a psychiatrist for him to even be open to having a conversation with me about this, and which kind of never ended up happening. And then he thankfully retired and I got care somewhere else. And then the next person finally diagnosed me. But the reason that that first person didn't want to have the conversation is because he said, when you were growing up, so you said ADHD, if you don't have symptoms of it in childhood, you don't just like get it as an adult. So I was like, okay, so what do you want to know about my childhood? And he said, well, did you have a messy desk? And I said, no, I had like a very neat desk. And then he said, did you talk out in class? No, I didn't talk out in class. And then he said, well, did you get good grades? I was like, yes, straight A's. He's like, there's no way you had ADHD. And that was literally his own, like, he's like, yeah, you're no.
Right. And
there's such a speech to bias. Like,
right. And, but that is happening with kids, right?
Yeah.
Particularly with girls, yeah, where they have the neat desk and they're doing everything they're supposed to do and they have the great grades, but that doesn't mean that their brains don't work differently and there aren't things we can do to support them. But yeah, I mean, nobody when we were kids would have diagnosed a girl with ADHD. That was just absolutely unheard of. And I was lucky when I got my diagnosis at 47 as well.
Oh, look at us.
I know. We really are twinning today. You know, I was lucky to have gone to somebody who understood how it manifests very differently in girls. And it still manifests, right? Like, it didn't go away. You and I have had successful careers and are organized and are able to do things. But that doesn't mean the ADHD doesn't exist. Mm-hmm. It just means we have figured out the tools in order to make our brains work in the way the world is, right? It doesn't mean that our brains don't work the way they used to. They still work the same way. We mm-hmm. just, you know, I set a million alarms on my phone so I don't forget to pick up my kids, right? Or like, if you watch me unload a dishwasher, you would have no doubt that I had ADHD because, mm-hmm. you know, the plates come out one at a time and then I walk off and do something else. And by the end of the day, the dishwasher is empty, but it is not in a way that's kind of linear.
Right.
And that's okay.
It's funny through the process of diagnostics as well, recognizing things that you didn't know that you did because you thought like, this is just what everyone does. And my right. husband pointed out at one point, he's like, yeah, like how you always leave cupboard doors open. And I was like,
oh my
no,
God,
I don't.
I do that too.
I 100%.
And I've never noticed it. Yes.
I was like, you are a liar. Like, how dare you? And then I've totally started. The other day I opened their fridge to get out half and half, walked away. Just, I don't even know how long it was open. I came back and I was like, oh my God, my husband is like, he would be so excited to see this happen because he'd be like, see, told you. And I'm like, I close everything. I am very careful.
I can't, literally the same conversation I have with my husband, the same one. And he's like, I've just come to terms with the fact that I'm always going to be closing the doors of the kitchen cabinets. And I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about.
Right. So funny. Yeah. So wild. But so I do think that it's helpful to know these things about ourselves because then we can have systems in place to recognize like, okay, so I do tend to do this, even though I didn't realize it. So then what can I do to support that or to make sure that like, you know, things that are more critical than cupboard doors, that I'm able to manage them and work with them in ways that like allow me to stay on top of my game. Right. And like you said, like actually pick your kid up from school. yeah. So very significant, very important. I want to dig into, so being a neurodivergent mom with two neurodivergent children.
Such a tongue twister.
It is. I know. I'm like feeling like I'm developing a stutter every time I try to say it. Like I can barely get it out. So I'm wondering, I actually had a client a couple of years ago talking about this, like saying that she had ADHD or her husband had ADHD and her kids had ADHD. And she was like, it's just so hard in our household. And I remember thinking, that sounds like a lot. Like that sounds really overwhelming. And then as our family has gone through some diagnostic stuff with multiple family members, I'm like, oh, and here we are the same.
Right.
And I'm curious for you, when we have this, when our households are made up of multiple neurodivergencies and to varying, you know, extremes, what does that look like on a daily basis? And also how can we normalize that a bit? Because like, when I heard my client say this, I was like, how do you even get through the day? And now I'm like, I know so many people living this way now that this is very, very common actually, but it was the first time I'd ever heard anyone say it 5 years ago.
It was interesting because, you know, my house is chaos, like many people's houses. And I laugh because when people are like, ADHD isn't a thing. And I'm like, you should see what my house is like when I'm trying to get my kids ready for school. And then you can tell me that ADHD is not a thing. But I think it's okay. I think we just accept the chaos as normal mm-hmm. because this is our experience normal. Mm-hmm. And just because our kids are neurodivergent and we're neurodivergent and the way things happen look different doesn't mean that that's wrong, right? Like my husband is neurotypical. He's much more of a Vulcan than I would say a human. And he's just the most super rational, linear thinker. Mm. And he stops every so often and looks around and he's like, I don't know what to do here, right? Because we're all doing our thing. But our thing is normal and that's okay. Right. And I have no desire to change that, right? This is who we are. I love us this way. This adds joy and fun to our family. And who's to say that if my kids were neurotypical, my house wouldn't be chaotic either. So like, I don't want it. And I don't want people to think that because we're neurodivergent, there's something that needs to change. It doesn't.
Right.
Right. Like neurodivergence, you know, has challenges and I'm not going to pretend that it doesn't, but it also has some unbelievable gifts that come along with it. And too often our kids hear over and over and over again, criticism at school because of the way they process the school experience and what they are doing is wrong and their behaviors are bad. They start thinking that there's something wrong with them and there isn't anything wrong with them. Just like we wouldn't tell somebody who was super tall that there was something wrong with them. There's not. They just learn things differently. And if we focus on all of the cool things that this allows their brain to do and keep reminding them about how wonderful they are, then they're going to grow up feeling really good about being neurodivergent. And that's yes. what I think we need to do.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. My son last year had a teacher who was so, and like every parent I've talked to who's had a kid in this class over, you know, in the 6 years we've been at the school agrees that this teacher had the most unique ability to see, to like really, really see every single kid. And we didn't realize how special she was in this way until like midway through the year where we kind of started talking and I was like, I feel like she just like sees my kid in this different way. And then every other parent's like, me too. Like it's incredible. And what was so interesting when we would have conferences or emails back and forth and stuff, I would express like, hey, like I'm getting the feeling that, you know, my child is pretty loud in class and maybe disruptive. And she would always come back with, he's really working on what it means to be a good leader. And she would say this to me over and over. And I'm like, I mean, is he just being really disruptive? She's like, you know, Sarah, he's really making strides in figuring out how, when he says this as a leader, it comes off this way. When he says these things as a leader. And I was watching her frame all this. And I was thinking like my biases about disruptive behavior and how she's reframing it. And she's like so enthusiastic about his quote unquote leadership skills. And it was such a moment for me. And then and to kind of compare that to other environments that he's been in where it hasn't been received the same way. And I think that other parents kind of had this experience too, where they were just like no one sees this child this way. And so uniquely that like everything they do is part of their gift, which is really, really incredible.
You need to clone this teacher.
Right.
But like, that's what it should be like. You know, yeah. I love using stories with my kids when they feel down about something that they can't do. So both my kids have really poor handwriting. Their fine motor skills are terrible. And they get frustrated and they feel like somehow they're stupid because they can't write well. And I use a story of, they talk about him in the movie Oppenheimer, but there was a scientist named Niels Bohr, who was Oppenheimer's mentor. And he won a Nobel Prize in physics. And he's the person who came up with the idea that there's an atom and there's a proton and a neutron and they, you know, and the shape of the atom. And so he was this founder of physics. He couldn't write either. And for his dissertation, he had to dictate it to his mother for her to handwrite it for him because his handwriting was so bad. And yet, look at what he contributed to the world. And could you imagine if somebody told him in fourth grade that you're dumb because you can't write? Mm-hmm. I mean, we would be missing out on so many incredible things in this world if all we focused on was the things our kids can't do. We right. need to keep focusing on the things that they can do. They're so creative. They think about things in different ways. That is what's going to bring benefit to society, not sticking in your lane and doing everything everybody tells you to do.
That is such a powerful example. And what came to mind immediately was I'm imagining in many school systems, if someone, if a parent were to say, my child's going to dictate their paper, I'm going to write it, and then my child will submit it. I imagine we're not to the phase of writing papers yet.
So, but yes, I would imagine,
but in theory, I'm imagining most school systems would be like, yeah, that's not allowed. Like right. The parent doesn't get to write the paper. And then to your point, like then that idea never makes it out into the world. So we all lose, right? But like that person never gets to be fully seen by society.
Yes. There are so many examples of that. You know, kids with dyslexia so often feel like they are not smart because they can't read the way their peers do, right? And actually, they have unbelievable skills around spatial recognition. These kids can grow up to be incredible engineers and scientists. And Harvard did a study a couple years ago where they looked at PhDs in aerophysics and aerospace physics, and they said, here's an image of a black hole. Can you find it? And the ones with dyslexia were able to identify it like four times better than the ones without. And these are all PhDs, right? But the dyslexic scientists had a gift that the other ones didn't. But yet those were the kids who in school were told that you're not smart because you can't read.
Yeah.
We are missing the opportunity to structure learning on these kids' strengths so that they can grow up and do incredible things, the things that they would want to do. But too often they keep hearing this message that because they're not like everybody else, they're not good enough.
Right. And it seems like so much of it is a lot of diagnostics are based in around neurodiversity are based in deficit or like framed in deficits.
Right. Yep.
Like they can't do this, they can't do that, they struggle with this, they struggle with that. And I was just thinking as you were talking, like, what if instead that wasn't even part of the conversation? Instead, it was like, oh, so now that we, like, your child is diagnosed with this thing, so that means they're going to be really good at this and really good at this and really good at that. Like, what if that was the beginning of the conversation? Like, that is such a different conversation than this will always be hard and you might never get to do this. And like, you're never going to measure up in these other traditional random ways.
And as a parent, and again, like we're talking to moms, when you get that diagnosis for your kid, it doesn't matter what age they are, you go through a mourning process because you're like, the life I thought my kid was going to have, they're not going to have. And of course, none of our kids have the life we thought they were going to have, but it's this like sudden kind of punch in the gut that's like, your kid is not going to do what you thought they were going to do. And that's actually not true. But the way things are framed to us as parents, that's what we feel. And then that's what we imbue with to our kids about what they should feel about their differences. And that's not okay, right? We should be constantly highlighting to them all the strengths that come with being neurodivergent.
Yes, yes, yes. I want to talk a little bit about advocacy and like self-advocacy and then also neurotypical advocacy. And I don't mean advocating for neurotypical people, but neurotypical people advocating for others.
Yes.
So why is it like all of a sudden I was like, that might sound weird. So why is it important for neurodivergent people to speak up in terms of advocating for themselves and taking up space so that they can successfully navigate the world? But then also, I think whenever we talk about someone in a group that is potentially, you know, excluded or overlooked or underestimated, we also need to look at the counterpart group that actually has the most power and influence, like what is their role in this? So can you talk about advocacy from both sides?
Yes, absolutely. So I think it is so important. And we've seen a big shift in the past 10 years that people own their neurodivergence, right? It's not something to be embarrassed about. Like I was thrilled when Elon Musk went on SNL and was like, I'm autistic. And I was like, yay. Or, you know, when Eminem says that he's autistic, like my sixth grader who loves rap thinks it's the coolest thing that he and Eminem have something in common, right? Like those things are so powerful. And so the more people do it, the less this becomes a stigma. There's nothing wrong with being neurodivergent. And by hiding and being shameful of those differences, it makes it seem like there's something wrong. So for neurodivergent people to like shout it from the windows is hugely important. And then, like you said, for neurotypical people to understand that this exists, right? It is an invisible difference. And the only way to be able to change the way society views neurodivergence is by neurotypical people understanding it and then understanding that it's a gift, right? How are we going to change those school systems to focus on the kids' strengths if the people who are running those school systems don't understand it themselves, right? Are still thinking of it as this deficit model.
Exactly. This episode is supported by EarnIn. Life doesn't happen bi-weekly, so why should payday? The money you earn now can be in your hands today with EarnIn. EarnIn is an app that gives you access to your pay as you work, up to $100 per day or up to $750 per pay period. Super, super easy to use. You just download the EarnIn app and verify your paycheck. Then you can access up to $100 a day as you work and leave an optional tip. So the app is free. You can leave a tip if you want. Any money you access plus tips are automatically repaid from your next paycheck. So here's the thing. Sometimes getting close to your next paycheck, next pay period, and you realize, oh gosh, like paycheck doesn't come until next Friday, but we have this event that we need to attend this weekend and we need money for it. Or we have to buy a gift for someone. Or, oh my gosh, like my kid tore through their shoes and now we have to buy new shoes this weekend and the money's not in the bank yet. So EarnIn can help you access the money you've already earned at work by giving you this little bit of money in advance. So make EarnIn part of your financial routine and join EarnIn's over 3.5 million customers who say things like, when I think about EarnIn, I think about financial stability and security, and it gives me a lot of peace of mind. So for our listeners, all you need to do is download EarnIn today. It's spelled E-A-R-N-I-N, and you can download it in Google Play or the Apple App Store. When you download the EarnIn app, type in Shameless Mom under podcast when you sign up. So there'll be a little place where you can, where it says, what podcast did you hear about them on? Type in Shameless Mom under podcast. This helps to show support for our show and our advertisers. EarnIn is a financial technology company, not a bank, and subject to your available earnings, daily max, pay period max, and location. See earnin.com/TOS for details. Bank products are issued by Evolve Bank and Trust, member FDIC. This episode is supported by a podcast I want to share with you called Understood Explains. So this show is about navigating ADHD, dyslexia, and other learning and thinking differences, which can be so confusing. And so every season of the show is around a different theme. So there's a season on special education, there's a season on ADHD diagnosis for adults, and the current season is all about IEPs. I love this podcast because the episodes are 10 to 15 minutes long. So if you are short on time or short on focus, you can take this content in super quickly, easily. It's very digestible. And the show is hosted by teacher and special education expert, Juliana Urtube. So Juliana talks all about how to navigate educational plans, IEPs. She talks about the differences between IEPs and 504 plans. She really breaks things down in a really clear and simple way so that you have some of those questions that you might be thinking around, like, does this pertain to my child? Is this something I need to be looking into? Like, where do we go from here? Where do I go if I have questions? Juliana has you covered. She explains so many different things and so many different little pieces and nuance of IEPs and special education and different things on Understood Explains. So I want you to go check it out wherever you're listening to this podcast. You can go listen to Understood Explains. Just go into your podcast app, do a search for Understood Explains, and it will pop right up. Click on it, pick your episode, and get the answers that you've been looking for and the support that you need around different learning differences and differences in school. And I hope that that's a big takeaway for people, that the deficit model, like that when we all see it that way, then I think that does create space for pretty universal, I'm hoping it creates space for like universal recognition, like, oh, we're like all getting this wrong.
Right. Right.
And then that hopefully creates the impetus for making things better. I want to talk about your work. So, which we haven't even talked about, like you referenced, like I write some books. So that's what we're like, I really want to dig into because I know that your work is really, really significant. And I know really supportive of all the things we've been talking about. So you have a number of books collectively known as the Super Fun Day books. Can you talk about the impetus to your, to you becoming an author and what that has been like for you?
So I would have never imagined that I would have been an author and an illustrator when I was a kid, because reading was really hard. I couldn't focus on anything I was reading. And so therefore writing was hard. But when my oldest son was diagnosed in kindergarten, he needed to wear headphones to school because he had sensory issues and loud noises bothered him. I couldn't get him to wear headphones. He didn't think it was cool. right? Even in kindergarten, he's like, nobody else is doing this. I don't want to do this. So, yeah. And I tried to be like, look, DJs wear headphones. You're going to be like a DJ. And he's like, I'm not buying this. and so I tried to find picture books that showed kids wearing headphones, because so often if kids can see themselves in a book, it normalizes their feelings. It normalizes the difference. And I couldn't find a picture book that had a child wearing headphones. So I decided to make one. And maybe it was hubris because I had no idea what I was doing, but I used a story that my son actually went through of Halloween and being scared of the Halloween parade at school and not wanting to go to Halloween. And I used that story, and in it, the character wears headphones. And so that was kind of my first step to say, how do we create more books that show these kids doing brave and great things? And all of my books do that. They go through kind of a challenge and anxiety, something to do with change, and they show how the child can work through those on their own, right? So that they get that independence and they are able to succeed. And it's great. I get emails and messages from parents constantly being like, my child is pointing at the character in this book saying, that's just like me. And there are very, very few books out there, relatively speaking, for neurodivergent kids. I think it's like less than 0.5% of children's books have neurodivergent characters. And as we know, there are a lot more neurodivergent kids out there. The other thing I do with my books is, like we talked about earlier, I show a Black girl being neurodivergent, because if she can say, oh, look, this is also what neurodivergence looks like. It's not just the smart white boy, right? That it looks like lots of different kinds of people. Then maybe we can change that perception so that people understand that neurodivergence impacts every kind of person.
I love this so much. So in your books, I love the visual of the headphones. I think that's so impactful. And when we talked earlier about invisible differences, I'm curious if it was challenging for you to take things that are invisible and incorporate those into picture books for kids. I'm wondering, how else did you do this aside from the headphones? Because that's such a great visual. And we can make so many different assumptions, or, you know, we can come up with so many different reasons that a child might be needing to wear headphones.
Right.
How do you navigate demonstrating differences through pictures in your books?
So I deliberately don't use diagnoses, because my books are for kids. They're for kids kind of 3 to 9, and not all kids are diagnosed at that point. And it's not really my job as an author for these kinds of books to say, this is what you have. Mm-hmm. It's more about what they're feeling and experiencing. And so my characters struggle with changes of schedule, for example, right? They'll talk about the fact that the schedule is going to change, and that makes them worried. Or they have fidget toys, or they sit in different kinds of seats in class. So there are markers that highlight the fact that these kids are neurodivergent, and the way they think tends to represent the way a neurodivergent child may feel about a situation. And so that's how it pertains to showing that neurodiversity. All of the font in my book is dyslexic friendly, and my books are also available.
Say more about that.
Well, because dyslexia, it is easier for children to read if the font is simple and clear, doesn't have kind of curly cues, is spaced out. The letters are spaced out wider than normal, and the line spacings are wider. It's easier for kids with dyslexia to be able to read along with the book. And my books are also available as audiobooks, even though they're picture books, because I wanted them to be accessible for every kind of learner.
I love it so much. I was recently talking about, as someone who struggles with reading comprehension and staying focused, and is also applying to grad school. Like, oh my gosh, it's been like almost 30 years since I had to read a lot. And I've leaned on audiobooks a lot in the last, since I had my son, a lot, because I love learning, but just like for practicality issues, I've listened to more and more audiobooks. But I was thinking of a conversation I had with someone a couple of years ago. And I thought this, I was like, that seems like it would be cumbersome, but now I'm like, I think I'm going to need to do this, listening to an audiobook while you're reading. And I had this realization the other night. I was laying in bed reading some pretty intense text about some work I'm doing. And I thought, I think I'm going to need to do that in grad school because otherwise, as soon as it gets too dense in terms of, and this was literally my brain, I was going through a page of like really dense material and I started flipping pages ahead looking for like, where's there a graph or a picture in here where the text is broken up? Like I was craving that. I was like, when am I going to get to the page where it's not just like every single line is taken up with words and there's like some spaciousness. And it was, there was none. I was like 20 pages ahead and I'm like, there's not like one single graph in here to take up some space to like make it easier for my brain. And I thought I'm going to have to probably listen to keep me moving in a story versus, or in a, in, you know, complicated text.
The good news is almost every university now, if you have your ADHD, for example, will give you access to the audiobooks of the texts, right? That's not the way it was when we were younger. But
I was assuming I'd have to buy like the hard copy and the Audible.
You'll be able to do that if you go, different schools have it in different places, but that's a great thing. And look, I don't think there's anything wrong with listening to audiobooks. I do that now too. And it allowed me to love literature in a way that I hated in high school. Mm-hmm. And I think about it this way. You wouldn't tell a blind person that reading using their fingers isn't really reading. So if we're using our ears to read, who cares? As long as we're doing something with it once it gets in our brain. And all the studies have shown that people who listen to audiobooks get the same kind of benefits from reading than if you read using visual, using your eyes. Mm-hmm. So there's nothing to, like, it's fine. Listen to audiobooks. If that's the way you are going to consume that information that way.
Yeah.
It'll be much easier.
I love, that's such a great point. It's so funny how we like make up social narratives about things and then internalize them. It's like, well, it doesn't count. And I actually hear this a lot in the podcasting space when people are just talking about different books and stuff. And they'll say, well, you know, I cheated and listened to the audio. I'm like, how is that a cheat?
It's not a cheat. It is not a cheat at all. And again, like I said, you wouldn't tell a blind person that they're cheating by reading Braille. Why would you? Like, it doesn't mean it doesn't make it any less learning. You still have to take those words in your head and process them and do something with them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Get them in your head any way you want.
100%.
I give you permission.
Well, I'm so excited. I'm like, oh, I have like this whole new thing to explore once we get off this call. Got to send an email. How am I going to get my audiobooks?
Right. Here's my that's why the diagnosis is so important, right? Yeah. Normally, I wouldn't care about that label, but it allows you to access different things to make learning more accessible.
Yeah. Such a great point. And I do think when it comes to diagnostic tools and the value of diagnosis, I think it can be really polarizing. People as adults were like, well, I've navigated this far. Like what's good is a diagnosis. I'm fine because normal is normal to us, even if it's, you know, could be made a lot easier. We just don't know it. And then with kids, I think because we worry about stigma or stigmatization that we can be hesitant to do diagnostic stuff. But what I've learned over and over again is that more information is always better. And when we have more information, then we make choices differently and decisions differently. And that can change the trajectory of anything and everything.
Well, and so I think particularly with kids, if you give them a label to explain what they are going through, it makes them feel like they are not alone. They're not walking through this world being like, what's wrong with me? Everybody else is different and this is easy for them and it's hard for me. There must be something wrong with me. Mm-hmm. But if you're like, no, your brain just works differently. You have ADHD. It's going 100 miles an hour and that's okay. And so do all these other people. Mm-hmm. And they're not alone.
Yeah.
It's huge for their self-esteem.
Yes. Yes. I talked about my diagnosis with ADHD, but also prior to that, PTSD and anxiety. And especially with PTSD and anxiety, it was such a relief because it opened up so many things where I was like, is this just like everyone? Does everyone worry about all the things all the time and not sleep at all?
Right.
And then I was like, finding, I'm like, most as I talk to people, they're like, none of us do, like, that's not common. So being able to connect dots was so incredibly helpful and really, really freeing. Cause then I felt like I wasn't trying to constantly figure out why I needed different things or what that should look like with a diagnosis. I was like, oh, so that means this goes, works this way. So my way to then manage it or function, you know, with it is to do it this way. And it was
exactly
so much more clear and simple than my workarounds of like trying to meditate in the middle of the night, which was not working at all.
Look, I would love it if somebody with ADHD could tell me how to meditate, because I just like, I'm sorry. I can sit there, but my brain
just
does not
do
that.
I just get mad. I'm like yelling at myself in my head. Don't think about anything. Don't think about anything. So with the book and with the books and the series, can you talk a little about what you hope to accomplish with the series?
Two things. The first is I want neurodivergent kids to be able to see themselves in the pages of a book and feel like they are fine just the way they are. And equally as important, I would love neurotypical kids to read these books and to help understand the different kids that they have in their classroom, right? So if they see a picture book with somebody wearing headphones and then there's a kid in their class wearing headphones, it's not weird anymore because they saw it in a book, right? Or if somebody needs to take movement breaks or play with fidget toys or gets to, you know, do something that's different and they've read about it, it's no longer weird or strange. And ideally, then kids aren't going to be bullying each other about such things.
Yes, I love it. Can you tell people where they, so you, I have a list here. You have a long list of books, a couple of them. I also noticed that it's all a first name and a last initial. So we have Benny J in The Horrible Halloween. We have Emily D in The Fearful First Day, Avery G in The Scary End of School. Are there any books that you want to really highlight of your series or anything that you want to say in terms of where people should start, who should go get them right now, anything along those lines?
Look, they tend to be pretty seasonal. The only one that tends to kind of go throughout the whole year is George J. and the Miserable Monday, because every Monday can be miserable. But I also, for parents and teachers, I have free teacher guides on my website that were designed by psychologists and tested in classrooms that they can use, and they're free because, you know, nobody will tell you that they become a children's book author to make a lot of money. For me, this is about getting those books out there and getting them in classrooms and getting them in homes. And they're also available in Spanish, which just happened this summer, which was fun.
That's amazing. I love it. Where can people find your books?
They're available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble's, but also on my website at savanhong.com. I'm the only Savan Hong in the entire world, so it's really easy to find me.
I love that you get to be the only one in the world. Like, there's sadly not the same for Sarah Dean.
No.
Okay. So last question, Savan, how are you currently showing up as a shameless mom?
So I think, and this wasn't inspired by the Barbie movie, but it kind of reinforced it, is that I literally wear my Birkenstocks everywhere I go. And as much as it mortifies my children, like, they don't come off my feet. And I even wear the sneakers. The sneakers are great. You can't tell they're Birkenstocks, and they're so comfortable.
Not aware of the sneakers. Mm-hmm.
Check out the sneakers.
But I'm a big Birkenstock fan. But I'm Uggs in the winter, Birks in the summer. And then Birkenstock slippers.
Slippers. Yes, so. Yes, the slippers. But yeah, check out the sneakers. They are fabulous.
Okay, noted. That's definitely not Ben and how anyone else has answered this question.
Well, I feel about it.
I love it so much. Well, people are so funny because they'll ask me before, they're like, I know I have to like say how I'm a shameless mom. Like, what are you looking for? And I'm like, I am not looking for anything. I just want you to, whatever comes up for you. So I love that that's what came up for you. Oh my goodness. Savan, this has been so much fun, but also so fascinating. I have learned a lot, and I know our audience has learned a lot as well in terms of our perspective internally, but also our perspective outwardly into the world and how we can all, you know, show up differently and better in terms of whether we're advocating for our own neurodivergencies or being an advocate for others. So thank you for the work that you're doing. Thank you for being here. Are there any other links? I'll link through to your website, savanhong.com. That's SIVANHONG.com. We'll link to that and your Instagram and Facebook through the show notes. So people go to shamelessmom.com, click on the episode with Savan Hong. They'll be able to click right through. Anything else, that links or resources you want to drop for people?
Look, if you're interested in learning more about neurodiversity, check out my Instagram page. It's not really about me being an author, but it focuses on the positivity of neurodiversity and has lots of tips and useful information there. So that's kind of where I keep up my advocacy and try to have parents and kids feel really good about their difference.
Oh, I love it. Okay. We'll link through all that. I don't think I'm following you yet. So I'm going to go do that in a minute. And Savan, thank you so much for being here. When the next book comes out, will you please come back and we'll talk about it on the show?
Absolutely. I would love it.
I would love to continue the conversation. Thank you for being here.
Thank you so much, Sarah.
Thank you so much for joining me in the Shameless Mom Academy today. I really, really appreciate you being here, and I hope you learned something new. As always, this conversation will be continued over in our free private Facebook group. You can join that group by going to shamelessmom.com/Facebook to connect with other shameless moms just like you. Additionally, if this is your first time listening to the show, know that we are here every Monday and Wednesday with a brand new episode. So make sure you subscribe, go to whatever podcast app you use and subscribe to the show so you never miss an episode. You can do that directly if you go to shamelessmom.com/review. That will put you in Apple Podcasts, where you can click on the subscribe button and you can also leave a review. If you scroll down a little bit, you can leave a 5-star review. You can write a few sentences letting me know what you thought about the show. If you let me know how the show has impacted you in becoming a more shameless mom, you might be nominated to be Shameless Mom of the Week. Also, please share this episode. My goal is to help more mamas be more shameless every damn day. So please do share this episode. You can take a screenshot of the episode on your phone and then share it out on social media. Tag me at the Shameless Mom Academy on Facebook or Instagram. I'm quick to reply and eager to send you Facebook love and love to be connected to all of you. So again, thank you for being here. I can't wait to be back here again with you in just a couple days. And until then, no matter what you do today, make sure you do it shamelessly.
If you're a parent, I invite you to join us at the Mindful Mama podcast, where it's all about becoming a less irritable, more joyful parent. With sometimes hilarious and always thought-provoking experts and friends, at Mindful Mama, we know that you cannot give what you do not have. And when you have calm and peace within, then you can give it to your children. I'm Hunter Clark Fields, and I can't wait to see you there. Listen in to the Mindful Mama podcast.